Hey, stick around. Ham Nation is coming up, and you do not want to miss this episode. It's all about our safety. It's about what amateur radio can do to help all of us and make the clubs work better. Let's have more fun on Ham Radio, and you're going to learn about it right here, coming up next.
Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks. You know you can be confident when tax time rolls around with FreshBooks because they make filing a walk in the park. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 445 for March 18th, 2020. Dayton Hamvention canceled? Say it ain't so. Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, and we're coming to you from our studio in Belleville, Illinois. That's just across the river from St. Louis. And we have an incredibly important show tonight, so let's pay attention, everybody, because there's going to be a lot of information about what's going on here. I have my defense that I've been wearing the last week. I don't go anywhere without them, and I don't know how many tubes of this that Sarah and I have been through. And we were very fortunate. We got pretty stocked on these things, so... We're pretty ready, and we'll be talking about some of this very, very same stuff. Gordon West, you're with us. How are you doing? I'm sure you're all keyed up and ready to go.
We are, Bob, and some important messages in part of the short shots for tonight. And like you, Suze and I are set with our hand cleaners and all of the anti-disinfectants. So we're ready. Back to you, Bob.
All right. Very good. Yeah, we have to, it's a new world. And so whether you agree or not, you have to do it. You just have to do it. And we're having some very special guests with us. First of all, Michael Coulter is here from Dayton. Michael, how are you doing in all of this?
Well, it's been a pretty trying experience for me and for a whole lot of us here, for our Hamvention family. And we had to go through a lot of soul searching to try to figure out what was the right thing to do. And 2 months out from that last weekend, I felt it was important we made a decision. And the prognosis of the way things are happening now, it didn't look like we could really have a Hamvention. So we had some very serious meetings, our executive committee, and we came to the realization that there's just not going to be enough toilet paper at the Hamvention to make it happen. I'm just kidding about that. I'm just kidding about that. It's a very serious situation. And we felt it was very important to immediately let all our stakeholders know, and that includes vendors, all the people that come, all our guests, all the people that come and provide food and other services. And people were hanging in there, and we just felt that we didn't want to be, number one, we didn't want to put anybody in jeopardy, and we didn't want people to come there and maybe it'd be a smaller show. We didn't know what was going to happen. So we thought, let's go ahead and end this now. And you can't believe what a gut-wrenching decision that has been or was. And we went through, honestly, I think everybody in our group, our Hamvention family, and I think even beyond the people that actually volunteer at Hamvention, because if you look at who's in the Hamvention family, that includes all of you. You come to the event, you set up, you're working with people. You know, it's what we do. It's a great gathering, like days of old when they'd have the great gatherings in out west, you know, when the settlers would come or when artists would come together, people would come together and they'd show their wares and they'd trade. And it's that sort of thing. And we consider it a gathering. So we have been, you know, working on this. We have just recently posted ways that if you want to get your money back for your ticket, that you can. And the most exciting thing I think about it is we've had so many people say, we're just going to donate to your club because we want to make sure Hamvention is strong and vital. And we will not try to reschedule it this year. I know that's been going around. We will schedule it for next year, right around the same weekend. And I don't know what else to say except our team is hurting. It was the toughest things I've ever think we've had to do with Hamvention.
Well, Michael Gordo here. Can you imagine pulling off a convention, having five or six folks that are ill, that infects everyone? Guess who would be responsible? And you'd feel terrible for the hundreds of hams coming down with something from just one person from somewhere that had it. So I think all of us so much appreciate the hard decision that you at Dayton Hamvention made in giving it one more year. Everyone is suffering, you betcha. And we so much appreciate all the hard work that's been put into Hamvention 2020. Let's make it happen in 2021. You are with us and you have our full support in saying, let's be safe. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I'll tell you, on behalf of all the volunteers, and I'm just one of 700 plus, maybe 750 volunteers, and we're coming back and we're going to make this more robust, stronger than ever. When HERA closed, we pulled that off and moved. We've had a lot of support out there from the community. Yeah, we've had some people pretty negative about it, but when you look at the big picture, we have the difficult decision to make, and we have to be careful about. And I don't want, like you say, Gordon, I wouldn't want to have an event where we lose a whole bunch of people and they get sick there. And you know, this thing sounds like it's going to be tough enough. So we figured that it was time to make the call. And we'll be back. We'll be strong. We'll make it happen again, even better. So certainly appreciate your support and all the friends all across the globe. And I've had a lot of messages and phone calls from my friends all over the world supporting the decision. And they know what we're going through and telling me we'll be back.
Well, I really thank you for coming on with us. I was happy to be able to make contact with you and, glad you're here. You're always here to give us updates on the entire month in Dayton. So thanks for being here. It's not the good news we'd like, but it is the news we need because it could have been a real disaster as things are progressing. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So you did the right thing in making sure that we're all going to be safe and have our health. That's the main thing. So thanks very much for coming on, Michael. And let's all stay in touch and see what's going to happen and where you're going. You have any news, you know where to come. We'll be here for you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Good to see all of you. And I know Fred's got some really good news there, too. And I appreciate what you're doing, Fred. I always have. So anyway, from our Hamvention family, the best 73 to all of you. And stay strong and stay positive.
Very good. Thank you so much for being here. And yes, we have a very, very wonderful guest coming up. I read it today on his site. I'm sure most all of you dial up QRZ.com at least three or four times a day. And here's the man that started it all and keeps it all going. And he has an incredible story. You know, we might sometimes kid, but it's pretty serious about carrying all this around. I wear gloves everywhere I go outside the house today, and we're all trying to make sure it's all safe. Fred Lloyd, it's glad, I'm glad you're here, and it's happy to see you back home after your incredible experience. So the platform is here. We want to hear about this trip of yours.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you, Michael, for your comments, and Gordon as well. One thing that you'll hear from a lot of people is, you know, or one thing you're probably thinking about is, where's the worst place to be during a virus outbreak like this? Well, it's a cruise ship, and that's where I was. For the past 2 weeks, I was on one of those bucket list cruises. My wife and I saved up for this and planned it for a long time. And in the middle of February, we took off for a cruise around the tip of South America. And we started in Santiago, Chile. And from there, we would stop at several ports, go around Cape Horn and ending in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Well, the trip started out pretty normal. And we were listening to the news. They had wonderful television all on board. We kept up to date with everything. And when we left, there was only a few cases, you know, probably 20 or so in the United States and none in South America. And so we felt really confident. Well, things progressed rapidly, to say the least. And before we knew it, along the way, we started losing stops. We would come to a port and we couldn't stop there. And at one point, we had to wait. We had to stay on the ship for about 4 days before we could come to our next port. We weren't turned around specifically for virus concerns, or at least we don't think so. They said it was weather. But we did get, eventually we arrived in Montevideo, Uruguay, and there they wouldn't let us get off of the tour buses. Normally when you come into a port, you get on a tour bus, they drive you around town and show you everything. Well, they did the same thing, but they said you're not allowed off the bus because in Uruguay they have no cases and they don't want any cruise passengers out. So that was our first taste of things starting to go really bad. Along the way, we were awoken in the morning by an all hands PA message on the ship, and it said that the cruise line was shutting down all operations at the end of our cruise. And that was a pretty frightening thing to hear when you're 5,000 miles from home. And my wife and I by then had developed chest colds, and we were kind of hacking and coughing. And that's something else you definitely don't want to have happen to you when you're traveling. And when something like this is going on, everywhere we went, whenever we had to cough, we had to look around and see who was looking at us, because it was troubling, to tell you the truth. But we paid close attention to all the symptoms and everything, and we clearly did not have any of the defining symptoms of this COVID-19 virus. For instance, we had no fevers, no body aches, nothing of the sort. It was simply a chest cold, the type that all of us have had many times. You can tell from my voice, I probably still have some of it. Well, anyway, upon leaving Argentina, we got to the airport there, and we had to stand in a very long line of people because in Argentina, they check your passport when you leave the country as well as when you enter. And that was very uncomfortable for us. But what was worse than that was that 2 hours after our departure, we were leaving at 10 o'clock at night, the airport was to be shut down to all international traffic. And needless to say, we were pretty worried. We didn't know whether we were going to be able to get home. We didn't know where they were going to send us. However, we knew we were going to JFK Airport for a transfer. Did not want to go to JFK in particular after what we'd heard on the news, and because it's one of the largest airports around, but we had to go there anyway. And so after a 10 and a half hour flight, we went to JFK, and we were pleased to find out that the lines weren't very long at all in that particular terminal. T8 is where we came in, and everything went well. And then there was only another 10 hours before we finally got home to Phoenix, Arizona, and pretty tired after that. The worst thing I think that I can say that happened to me on the trip was that I lost one of my hearing aids. They asked me to pull the mask off my face, and when I did, the hearing aid popped out. And by the time I realized that I was already 3 checkpoints down the way, there was no possibility whatsoever. So now I'm in quarantine, and it's pretty clear to see. It's self-imposed quarantine, but I don't know whether I was affected by the virus. I don't know. I was around over 1,000 people in between the two airports, because that's just how it is, these large crowds. And so I've got to sit here now and just hope that I'm going to be okay for the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, the news, we've been watching the news on TV, and it's very clear that there's a lot of people that are suffering or about to suffer from this. And as a result of that, we met with the QRZ management. I met with Jamie, the CEO, and our staff, and we decided that for the next 90 days, anyone with a QRZ subscription who's having difficulty, for example, if they've been laid off or furloughed or sent home, we're going to extend their subscription at no charge for the next 90 days to help people out. We feel that, you know, the ham community has been very, very good to us, and we'd like to give that back. And several people have started taking us up on it, and it just makes us happy whenever we can help out. So that's the story of QRZ here today. And I'm sure you got a few questions. Let them rip.
Well, first of all, I don't have a question. I have an incredible statement that is a wonderful thing that you did to allow people to get QRZ and not have to pay for it right now. One of the reasons is there are so many news stories. That's why I watch it at least twice, three times a day. If I'm not looking up a call, that's another side of it. But the whole thing is that you now can read about what's going on in the ham community in your news article. So thank you so much for doing that. Gordo, isn't this something else? This is fantastic, huh?
Truly, QRZ is where we go to learn what's happening with ham radio in the last few days or few hours. And Fred, we just wish you both stay healthy. And what a story. I haven't lost a hearing aid yet, but I can imagine the day I do, I'm crippled on my starboard or port side. So hang in there. And again, we all so much appreciate what QRZ does for ham radio. Thanks, Fred, for that story.
Thank you, Lord.
That's really good. Fred, any kind of new things we need to know about that QRZ is about ready to launch?
Well, actually, just yesterday we launched a new operating award. It's similar to the one we launched last year. This new award is called Master of Communications for South America. No relation to my trip, but we now have an award that's specific. So if you do a lot of operating in South America, chances are you probably already qualify for this award. And I believe today we've 200 awards have been applied for already, and it was just launched this morning. So it's going to be a popular operating award. We're really excited about it, and we're happy to be doing something new here to give people something to look forward to during the next couple of months.
Oh, that's great. Well, we'll all have to go check it out on QRZ.com. So thanks very much to you, Robin, Jamie, all of them there at QRZ. We appreciate everything you do, and we'll continue to support you because we need you. So thanks so very much. We appreciate you being there for the community. That's great.
Well, thank you, Bob and Gordon. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
All right. There will be another time. We'll have you just to tell us what's going on in the happenings in QRZ. Well, Gordo, you and I have been talking here a little bit this week about what's going to happen here. Nobody knows where we are going. We're out at sea with no direction. And what I'm talking about is amateur radio. And I think the best thing that we have to do is to talk about what the clubs are going to do. And we must understand what really is happening about what's about to come about. We might not know, but we can pretty much tell that there's going to be some preparation. And I read a thing today. They were comparing the time period of March 5th to 13th of last year
which was 2019, and they compared it to that March the 5th through the 13th this year. And the licensed courses on the ham radio prep has soared more than 700%. And this shows a 7.1% uptick in the FCC amateur license. So the first week of March through now, we have really seen a growth in license. And of course, you know they're going to hit the air. So my question would be, now what do we do? It was bad enough just to me to have all these new licenses, but they aren't being helped. Now it's going to be a giant scream of help. So the clubs have to really, really crank it up and support the new people as well as all the members. How are your feelings with this?
Well, I agree, Bob. I have seen multiple newsletters, both locally as well as throughout the country, from clubs that indicate that the upcoming meeting is canceled. And we understand if we've got to be 6 feet away and stay away from anybody over 60, yeah, you get the idea. But what I don't understand is, wait a minute, don't cancel the meeting, but rather hold it on the air. That's what we're all about. And that's part of my short shots tonight. And we'll talk about it in a few. But Bob, these clubs now have a great opportunity to say, oh, no, the meeting's still taking place on the same night, same time. But here's where you dial it in, our local repeater or on Simplex. But we need to teleconference via ham radio, via voice conference, and just continue on. What do you think, Bob?
Absolutely. There'll be a few people remember this. But back in 78, I came back on the air in 76 in Marissa, Illinois, my hometown. I'd been out on the rock and roll scene. We all know about that for years. Well, I finally decided I was going to do something else, but I didn't know what something else was. I got back into radio, and there were only seven of us in Marissa that were hams. And of course, I helped all of them get there except one in this town of 2000. So I started this club, and I told them, look, it's going to be a different club. You're not going to come here, get a cup of coffee, and hear the minutes of last month or get the treasurer's report. Because if you were here last month, you'd have known. So you don't have to waste that time. And please trust the treasurer. He was something else. He kind of looked like one of the movie grunts that you would see all the time, W.C. Fields type guy. But anyway, that club, we grew to 300 members in a very short time. I built a repeater, all analog. There was no computers back in those days. And it was a 250-foot transmitter on a large coal silo in Baldwin, Illinois. We had four receiver sites about 50 miles around. So it was really easy for a lot of people to get into this monster repeater. It was one of the first big monsters out there. You could dial in 40 meters. You could dial in 10-meter FM and all that kind of stuff. But on Monday night, 147.210, I can guarantee you there were hundreds and hundreds of people on that frequency, and we held our meetings. It was great because we didn't have to go any one place. The other side of that, we never held a meeting in the same place each month, and we held them in very interesting places. We'd go to McDonnell Douglas where they were building the space capsule. We went to an aluminum company and watched them. He was a ham and invited us in, and we watched them do things with aluminum. And we went to Wick's pipe organ and watched them do all kinds of fascinating things with pipes and how they made all the wonderful woodwork, stuff like that. We also would, a couple of times a year, we'd meet at Heil Sound. We had 7,000 square feet there, and we built antennas. We'd take the older hams, pair them with the newbies, and we build antennas because, remember the guy that had the aluminum plant, he'd give us all this aluminum. So interesting, you didn't want to miss a meeting. That right there, my friends, that is your recipe to get things happening. You can. And I just got a note from Valerie. She's going to be here next week. She's doing very, very well. Her and Jerry are kind of, like all of us, hunkering down. Here's what she says. Something you may want to add tonight regarding clubs is not to overlook the capability to live streaming their meeting via YouTube, Periscope, or Facebook, especially with everyone being social distancing. These are great things. And we are hams. We are inquisitive. We can do these things. So I think that's your recipe to make your clubs viable. We've started a new thing here on the show to help you. And I did just a piece of it last week, and it's a thing we're going to start calling Club Spotlight. I've already got from last week a couple of you, just in that little mention that I made, a couple of you said something about the possibility of this happening. Well, we are. Every week we're going to spotlight a club. Your club, whoever's club. The thing is that we must have your input. So send me an email, K9EID@ARRL. So from there, what's going to happen on the West Coast? I'm sure you're going to be in the middle of it, Gordon.
Well, I hope so. I enjoy always being in the middle of things. And Bob, tonight, we're going to spell the rumor about these new lightweight type of batteries. And we're going to show you the difference between a battery that is protected. And you can see that little bump in this particular battery? That's the battery protection circuit. And that's in the BioNO lithium iron phosphate battery. So, Bob and Victor, let's go ahead and roll the shorts, and we'll talk about, first of all, getting rid of the rumors. First of all, there was a rumor that a ham had plugged in his battery to his rechargeable battery into a battery charger, and he left the garage, and it went up in smoke. In fact, it went up in fire, nearly burned down the whole house. Then the question was, well, what was that battery? Well, evidently, it was the lithium polymer battery for jump-starting a vehicle. That's a lot of capacity and a very small size, but boy, oh boy, you never want to drop one. This is not lithium polymer. This is lithium iron phosphate, and it is a stable battery. And you can drop it, you can kick it, you can short it, you can overcharge it. And what we showed you as the battery monitoring system will protect it. This is Kevin out in Santa Ana. He's a ham, and he's put these together, cylindrical cells, but everything is monitored by that BMS system. And this is the big one, about 100 amp hours, which we used at QuartzFest. We ran it, we charged it, we overcharged it with a solar panel without a charger on it, and there were no ill adverse effects. The ICOM kept playing. Everything went well and continued to, because it's lithium iron phosphate from bionopower.com. And they have smaller ones for us that do microwave work. That's a smaller battery monitoring system. And leads get attached to it. And if there's any high current or too much current in charging or low voltage or temperature, it automatically pulls the batteries out of circuit. San Bernardino Microwave Society agrees with us that rather than bring people all over the country to go to a mountaintop to watch their meetings, well, this is during a contest, and you can see there's a lot of fun activity that we do up on mountaintops on 10 gigahertz and 24 and gigs. We use that, at least I certainly do, and many of the microwavers use the BioInno power lithium iron phosphate batteries because they are stable. Same thing with the many Arden networks. And of course, we all need to support those that are supporting Amateur Radio Emergency Disaster Network 2.4, 5.6, 3.5. Many of us are on the 3.5, and boy, they turn off that band. Too late for comments now. We have to wait for the reply comments. But we've got to be cautious that we constantly protect our bands by using the heck out of the frequencies that we have available. And one of those groups is the Amateur Television Network. They were on a few weeks ago, and we had a fun time with Roland. He apologized that he was having link-up issue, but like any good ham radio operator, he went to a backup, and he came through ultimately loud and clear. That's Gary on the left and Mike Collis, who has just been such a strong supporter of not amateur television, but high-definition amateur television. And same thing with Gary. Mike's on the mountain, and Gary's down on the flatland at Quartz Fest. Those hams that wouldn't know an ATN from a TNC, from an NNOP, we said, hey, take that antenna on your RV roof, tie it into the antenna port that is going to feed your cable television, dial up around channel 54, and lo and behold, without doing anything other than a little bit of rerouting of the outside antenna to the cable and programming cable, not audio, not video, but cable TV over channel 54, 55, 56, 57, voila, they were seeing activity. And this was a great idea. So then the two came together, the Amateur Television Network and the San Bernardino Microwave Societies, who hold their meeting once a month, going, wait a minute, why don't we go live with live high-definition amateur television and allow us to stream your meetings? And if they've got a close-up shot, by golly, you'll even see it better at home on the Amateur Television Network, which is also on the YouTube, as well as several other medias, so everybody can see the excitement. So rather than going to a meeting and looking real hard to see all the different things, bango, it's loud and clear right at your home. So if you're sequestered at your home, as I am and Susie, we can still see the whole meeting live and direct. And this can take place with other amateur television network stations throughout the country. Some may be high definition, some may be just regular definition, but you need to go to the Amateur Television Network, run that all together on your browser.org, and you'll learn more about maybe your local club that is an ATN affiliate that might be able to bring in an ATN expert and televise your meeting, but not really at a meeting, but televise the presenter at his or her own home. And that's what Gary is doing right there. He's presenting to the Amateur Television Network that goes on to the San Bernardino Microwave Society once a month, small little antenna, microwave antenna, to get up to the repeater sites, and bango, your meeting, sans anybody actually being in the meeting, is actually televised throughout the Amateur Television Network and then carried throughout on YouTube. And to point out that video is so important for a ton of people to see that
don't have to actually be there. We don't need to go to space. 20 years ago to see Owen Gary at W5LFL, this came down from the International Space Station because they don't have any joint meetings up there. They've got to do everything video and audio. So I encourage all clubs that don't cancel a meeting. Just say this month's meeting in March or April is going to be held on the air. And conduct the meeting just like you normally would. Take questions from those that have questions out there. But don't say meeting is canceled. What the heck? Say meeting is usual time. But wait a minute. Don't hit the cars with your mask and gloves on. Just sit in front of your amateur television network or in front of, if it's just a audio meeting, in front of your 2 meter 440 radio, 222, you name it, you're on the air. Yeah, but what about the Gordo classes? I love to have people picking up the stuff and looking at them. Now, classes are nobody there. Well, but they could be there through amateur television or through one-on-one, through Skype. And Bob and I are happy, and Don as well, to Skype into you, and Valerie as well, and Amanda probably as well. We're happy to Skype into you and say hi to everybody. And if you have a way of getting that out to everyone via amateur television network, that would be wonderful. Even our United States Coast Guard says auxiliarists, no more direct contact with members or the public. Need to stay, you know, so no problem. We are conducting our meetings on both high frequency as well as VHF Monday and Tuesday nights, and it's very effective. One does not have to actually be sequestered there. Same thing with our instructor program. We have a lot of instructors that are not able to get over to see all of the free materials that have been made available from the W5YI group. No problem. We can go ahead, work with the Amateur Television Network, take our instructor class. It ends up on YouTube. So, wow, it's just like being there. And if you got a question, we hear it almost immediately. And, of course, we give everybody that are ham instructors the academy. Go to haminstructor.com. haminstructorallruntogether.com, and you'll learn more about all of the free materials that we like to make available because we need more kids in our hobby. And about a year ago, that's Neil, W6FOG in the background, through closed circuit television, these kids were on the air talking to the International Space Station. And wow, what a big deal for those kids to make contact with astronauts. The local ham radio store, Ham Radio Outlet, says we have never sold as many handhelds in the last 3 days than we have over the last several years. So it points out that hams are wanting to stay in touch. Brand new hams, I go, well, you know, now they can monitor. They can monitor behind the scenes of a club meeting. So when Gary is conducting his portion of the amateur club meeting, both on high frequency as well as VHF with his gear there from his command post, everybody's hearing him at once, just like he was at the meeting. So do consider not canceling a club meeting, but having a meeting either on the air, audible, or audiovisual, if you've got capabilities of coming up on the amateur television network through a local participating station, and there's many throughout the country. And if you want to describe the fun of building a amplified, good old spark, or good old, the good old crystal radio. There it goes. Wow. No, that's not spark gap. That's a crystal radio. This is fun stuff that can be conveyed to a large group, especially on amateur television. And for years, I conducted over the air 2 meter CW practice on learning the code. And I would send code for a minute or so and then ask for a readback. I would never ask any one student for a readback because maybe they had hit the head or were getting something out of the refrigerator, but I'd asked for a volunteer, and it really kept excitement up. And these volunteers were really wanting to jump in over the radio. So with these smiling faces out there, I encourage all of you that are rolling the club meetings to consider Amateur Television Network. And that's Roland, KC6, CBG. Roland is just JPG. Roland is such a strong supporter of this learning on the television via remotes. We hope all of you will do that. So take a lesson from something we're doing out here in Southern California, where your local amateur television network gets together with a local group, such as monthly the San Bernardino Microwave Society, and brings their club onto video on the YouTube for all to see. So that's my story. If things are getting canceled, let's work around it as ham radio operators. Support those hams that are pulling these together. And so important, support those ham organizations that had to cancel a ham fest. Pretty tough to do a ham fest via video, although Randy, you brought us some great videos. Let's hope we get the ham fest back in middle of the year or end of the year. Dayton Hamvention, I hope many of you will simply allow them to keep the funds, because they've incurred, I'm sure, huge expenses of having to cancel out, as many of us done with our air reservations. Yeah, we'll take the hit, but this is life. This is ham radio. Let's work around it, and let's make ham radio one of the saviors of this not-so-great situation for the next few weeks, hopefully not months to come. So that's my story, Bob. So let me turn it back to you or to whomever is going to follow me, and I hope to see you either on the air or on ham television, keeping ham radio rolling and getting more folks into ham radio, soon taking their test. And if they come by my house to test for technician, we keep them parked out on the driveway, and we bring the test to them with three examiners, and we do it right there. So there's no let up on what all of us hams, including all of you, are making to have ham radio happen. Bob?
This is just too great. Please, everybody, I hope you're listening, and I hope you do something about it. While Gordon was speaking, Victor called me on the intercom. Somebody's already sent a thing in about the clubs wanting to be on. I haven't read it yet. My gracious, this is great. So we'll have more coming up later on. George is coming on, and I got some things that we'll do with George, and then some things with Amanda. So don't leave, please. Don't ever leave. You never know what's going to happen here, because it's live. Speaking of live, here's the live wire, and we call him Don Wheelbanks. How you doing, Mr. Don?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's kind of a scary place to be in New Orleans. I want to give you some numbers here. 280 cases of COVID-19 in the state of Louisiana, 196 in the city of New Orleans, 7 deaths, all in the New Orleans metro area. We are the number two hot zone, I guess you would say, in the country right now, right behind Seattle, where this all began, and even hotter than New York, you know, the biggest city in the country. So it's kind of a scary place to be right now. I'm going to start doing some work from home probably next week, a couple of days a week anyway. There are certain things I can do better from work than I can from home, but, you know, it'll save me 250 miles of driving every week, which would be great to work a couple of days from home. But wanted to give you some good news that we just got in the chat room. Mark, N4BCD, who is the chairman of the Huntsville, Alabama Ham Fest, the home of the Young Ham of the Year Award, by the way, says Huntsville has no plans to cancel, in the chat room just a few minutes ago. So that is some good news, of course, in the wake of all of the big ham fests so far, including Dayton, that have had to cancel. We'll have more information on that and a list of other ham radio events around the world that have fallen victim to COVID-19. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about tax time in accounting. Tax time is here. It's not coming up fast. It's here. But you don't have to worry, because with FreshBooks, all your numbers are in one place, making filing your taxes so much easier. They've got tax-friendly categories, so everybody has a place without any of the confusion of what's what. So how can FreshBooks make your relationship with taxes a little less painful? Well, with their expense tracking feature. Track business expenses. Connect your bank account or credit card to FreshBooks. Every day you'll find your FreshBooks account is updated with your most recent spending, so you're always up to date. Never lose a receipt. Just snap a picture of a receipt, log it, and let FreshBooks keep things organized for you in the cloud. Keep your project spending on track, too, with FreshBooks. FreshBooks lets your team keep tabs on what they're spending on projects. It also means you keep a close eye on how things are tracking to budget. Bill your client for expenses. Quickly mark your business expenses as billable, add a markup, and then automatically pull them into an invoice for your client. Make tax time simple. Categorize your expenses. It's easy. It's made, in fact, with tax time in mind, so it's easy for you or your accountant to file. You'll have all the information you need without any of the complexity. FreshBooks also seamlessly integrates with other apps. See the money you've collected to the taxes you've already paid and everything in between. I have a friend who every year he had a huge shoebox crammed full of receipts. He would send it off to his accountant, and they would both cross their fingers and hope that they made the right decision. FreshBooks fixes all of that. Tax time does not have to be rough on your small business. Use FreshBooks to save time and get everything organized. Your accountant will thank you. Visit FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. You'll get 30 days free. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Enter HamNation and receive 30 days free. For a limited time, FreshBooks is offering 50% off your first 3 months when you sign up for a paid plan. For new customers only, and offers cannot be combined. That is FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Thank you, FreshBooks. We appreciate your support. Now, let's get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline and Dr. T. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2211, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. Breaking news, the big story this week, Hamvention 2020 was the latest in a global list of amateur radio cancellations brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic across the globe. The news came Sunday via Hamvention's various social media outlets, as well as the Greene County Sheriff's Office, that Hamvention 2020 has been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. More details as they become available. Newsline anchor Paul Brown has more on that global list of cancellations.
In the United States, one of the DXing world's foremost events, the 71st Annual International DX Convention, sponsored by the Southern California DX Club, which was to be held in Visalia, California, has been canceled. Scotland's DX Association has also postponed its GMDX convention that was to be held on the 4th of April in Stirling. In Kassel, Germany, the April 18th amateur radio event Funk.Tag was canceled. And back here in the United States, HamSci, or the Ham Radio Science Citizen Investigation, has canceled its in-person workshop in Pennsylvania this month, but is seeking an alternative means of holding the program. With news of cancellation and postponements elsewhere, we hear from Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
Coronavirus concerns have led to the cancellation of a number of amateur radio events in Japan, Iceland, and elsewhere. The Japan Amateur Radio League posted on its website that in compliance with government policies on public safety, the West Nippon Fair and the Tochigi Branch Ham Gathering did not take place on Sunday, March the 8th. The Chokugu Regional ARDF Competition, Saitama Chapter Meeting, and Nara Branch Meeting, all scheduled for Sunday, March the 15th, were also cancelled. The Kagawa Prefectural Chapter Ham Festival in Kagawa will also not take place. It was on the calendar for Sunday, the 22nd of March. Japanese amateurs in the Nara DX Association have also postponed an Islands on the Air DX expedition to Morilo Island in the Halls Island, citing coronavirus concerns. They announced that the trip will be rescheduled for next year or later. Meanwhile, in Iceland, the National Association of Icelandic Radio Amateurs also cancelled its winter flea market, which has traditionally drawn large crowds. It's been rescheduled for May the 3rd. And if you happen to be making contact with any VK stations during your DXing, kindly send us your QSL cards as one-ply or two-ply variety. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
For ongoing updates, please visit our Facebook page. Make sure to search using the hashtag ARN COVID.
Finally, this week, we offer our listeners a little perspective. If you've ever had antenna work knock you off the air for a couple of days or even weeks, you're actually in very good company.
What do you do when your antenna needs a critical upgrade? You go off the air, of course, until things are back in fine order. That's true whether you're an extra class licensee in the United States struggling with a 40-meter dipole, or if you're NASA's Voyager 2 traveling and more than 11 billion miles from Earth. The space probe's main means of communication is a 70-meter ground station dish antenna based in Canberra, Australia, that sends it commands. According to a report in phys.org, parts of that 48-year-old antenna, including transmitters, need upgrades that will likely not be completed until January of 2021. The upgrades are intended to reduce the risk of unplanned outages of this aging equipment. No worries, though. The article said it will still be possible to receive some scientific data from Voyager 2 while all this is going on. Three 34-meter antennas in Canberra will be configured so they can receive the probe signal. That's important. Voyager 2 was launched in 1977 and is on a mission to tell us more about deep space beyond the outermost edge of the solar system. Still, next time you spend an afternoon troubleshooting your Yagi or trying to restore your Delta Loop to its former glory, remember that your mission isn't quite as complex as the one facing Voyager 2. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
And a reminder that the nominating period for the 2020 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. You'll find the form on our website, arnewsline.org, under the Awards tab. The award will be presented Saturday, August 22nd at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Mike Askins, KE5CXB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the News Desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We have two bright regions giving us a show. One even fires the first long-duration flare of solar cycle 25. Those stories and more in the news this week. This space weather forecast is sponsored in part by Millersville University. Come get certified in broadcast space weather. Visit millersville.edu/swen. Space weather this week remains a bit on the quiet side, but at least the sun's giving us some decent eye candy to look at. As we take a look at our front side sun, you can see a bright region in the southern hemisphere. This is a new cycle sunspot. It's been given the name 2758, and on the 11th, it fires off a long-duration flare. This is the first long-duration flare we've seen from one of these new cycle sunspots, so it's good news. Now, granted, this didn't last all that long, and it really wasn't a strong flare, so it did not send us a solar storm, and it did not cause any radio blackouts, but it's still pretty noteworthy. Now, as that region is rotated off of the sun's west limb, there's actually another region that began to rotate into Earth view in the northern hemisphere, and this is also a solar cycle 25 bright region. Unfortunately, it fires off, looks like it launches a solar storm on the sun's east limb, and it has kind of died and fizzled since then, so we're not really getting all that much activity from it, but I'll show you some decent views from stereo. It is boosting the solar flux just a little bit. We're managing to stay within the marginal range for radio propagation, and along with some pockets of fast solar wind from a remnant coronal hole that's rotated in through the Earth strike zone, we are getting a little bit of boost in the space weather, but it's really not enough to bring aurora down, except for some skosh times at high latitudes, and that's about it. And likely these conditions are going to continue here over the next few days. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, for those of you who have been paying attention, you might have noticed a bit of a change when it comes to the X-ray data. This is because we have now switched, as of March 10th, we've switched over from GOES 14 and 15 to GOES 16, which is the new spacecraft. And just in time, too, because on March 11th, right after we got out of the moon's eclipse, bam, you can see right there, that's that B-class flare, that long-duration flare. We caught the tip of it and then the tail as it began to decay. Now, this is the region 2758, that is a new cycle sunspot, and that's the first long-duration flare from one of these regions. So that is more good news that solar cycle 25 is coming very, very soon. Now, we're still after that. We only had a few A-class flares from that region, and since then, things have fizzled out a bit more. But luckily, it looks like the solar flux is going to remain in about the low 70s here over the next couple weeks, so we don't have to worry about dipping back into poor radio propagation conditions on Earth's day side. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see over the past week or more, we've been kind of stumbling and bumbling along between quiet conditions to unsettled conditions and back again. The space weather has been pretty quiet, and that's mainly because we don't have any big coronal holes and no solar storms to speak of, since we're at basically solar minimum. So we're just kind of waiting for things to happen. We're getting little pockets of fast solar wind. For a matter of fact, on the 13th, we did get a little bump up in activity and got a little bit of aurora show at high latitudes. Then we quieted back down, and once again on the 16th we got a little bump up for a little bit, and that's beginning to quiet down, but we might still get another bump up here and there over the next day or so as a little bit more fast wind kind of comes our way, but it's really not all that strong. So aurora photographers at high latitudes, you might get a little bit more show. Mid latitudes, not much of a chance for you. The conditions are just too quiet, and unfortunately it's going to continue to be like this easily over the next week. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are getting hit by some small pockets of fast solar wind from a remnant coronal hole that's moving in through the Earth strike zone now. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions with up to about a 25% chance of a major storm, but likely this is a bit overblown. It's going to be sporadic at best, and then things will quiet down as we move into the weekend. At mid latitudes, we're also expecting unsettled conditions with up to about a 20% chance of active conditions, but again, this is probably overblown and sporadic at best, so I wouldn't expect to be able to catch a show at mid-latitudes, and then things will begin to calm down a bit more as we move into the weekend and probably be pretty quiet. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is in the green when it comes to big solar flares. After having two new cycle bright regions on the Earth-facing disk, one of them got rotated to the sun's far side and the other one fizzled, we're back to a spotless sun, so we have no risk for big radio blackouts or anything like that. So you GPS users, you should be very happy. Your GPS reception on Earth's day side should remain top-notch. However, we are managing to stay in the low 70s for solar flux, and this should make you amateur radio operators and emergency responders very happy. We are hugging the hairy edge of marginal for radio propagation on Earth's day side, and things will likely continue to stay that way. Now, we also, because we are in a solar minimum, we have a higher cosmic ray influx than we normally would have. So you frequent flyers, and this does include air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high altitudes and high latitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose, and this does include prenatal passengers, so please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is remaining a bit on the quiet side, but hey, we had our first long-duration flare from a new cycle sunspot, and this is good news because it's telling us that that solar cycle 25 is getting that much closer to actually officially starting. Now, unfortunately, we only have some small pockets of fast solar wind from a remnant coronal hole that's rotating in through the Earth strike zone. So your aurora photographers, unless you're at high latitudes, you're probably going to have to sit this one out and just kind of deal with it and keep waiting, because we don't really have any big coronal holes that look like they're going to be rotating into Earth view anytime soon. But this is good news for amateur radio operators and emergency responders. We're not getting all that much when it comes to anything like radio blackouts from big solar flares, and we are managing to hover in the low 70s for solar flux, and some of these weak kind of disturbances actually help radio propagation on Earth's day side. So enjoy while you have it. Now, also, you GPS users, you know, again, you guys also like these very weak, the weak space weather, because it helps stabilize that upper atmosphere for you. And as long as you are staying away from the dawn dusk terminators and away from any aurora at high latitudes, your GPS reception should look pretty top notch. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Of course, follow her on Twitter and at spaceweatherwoman.com, at Tamitha Scove on Twitter. That's the best way to get up to the second updates from Dr. Tamitha Scove. Thank you so much, Dr. T. You know, whether you're sequestered at home by choice or you're quarantined at home because maybe you're not feeling well, or you're just working from home because you don't want to get sick and you're looking for something to keep your mind active, WTWW Shortwave is always there. Always there. Great amateur radio-related programming. Of course, Bob Heil's organ music. Amateur Radio Newsline is on there. A whole bunch of really cool stuff. And some of the best disc jockeys from the Top 40 era. Steve Hunter, he's going to be on right after Ham Nation tonight. So check that out with some of the greatest hits of all time. Ted Randall, the world-famous Steve Taylor, Jeff Lawrence, Big Jim Edwards, keeping everybody's spirits up. The greatest hits of all time and taking requests. That's WTWW Shortwave. So make sure you check that out. George, what's going on with Smoke and Saw? You're gonna. What are we doing? Are we doing a Megger? What are we doing? I want to know. I want to know all about a Megger. Tell me about a Megger.
Well, we may tell you about a Megger, Don, but I'm going to keep you in suspense. Oh, about another minute and a half, because
okay.
First, I think we need to pay the bills tonight.
Oh well, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to get a message from ICOM.
I love ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo or just over 2 pounds, with RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8 volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen and live band scope with waterfall. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And ICOM invites you to enter weekly in the drawing for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. There'll be a new winner selected every week, and those winners will be thrown into a hat and drawn at the end of the month for a grand prize, and that's a new radio. For March, the new radio is the ICOM ID4100A entry-level D-Star Mobile with Big Rig features. It's a dual-band analog and D-Star Mobile, one band at a time, user-friendly interface for easier operation, built-in GPS, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available and downloadable Android and iOS apps. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And a couple of things to mention here before I answer Don's question on the Megger. First, I'm wearing a special T-shirt tonight. This is the Music Memorial Radio Station. And, you know, they kind of spell music kind of funny there. Well, that's because this came from down under. Our friend Kevin Mitchell, ZL1KFM, who incidentally is in the chat room right now, was here visiting, I don't remember what month, but last year. And he brought me this shirt. It's from ZL1ZLD and ZL1ZLF. It's the Suburban Amateur Radio Club down in New Zealand. So thanks for the shirt, Kevin. I wear it with pride here on the show tonight And it was great to meet you in person as well. A couple other notes I wanted to make here. First, we've been talking a lot about the coronavirus tonight. And, you know, the main thing I'm going to say about that, because everyone's covered everything else, is there's a lot of older hams. Yes, I know it's hard to believe, but a lot of us are a little older. Some are over 60. You know, we've got folks in their 70s, 80s, and 90s that really could be adversely affected by this thing. So I want you to check on your ham buddies, your people in your club, other hams in your area that are older, and Mike could use a helping hand with some things during this time period. I think that would be probably the best thing I would think you could do. Yes, hold your club meetings and continue on with that, but pick out, you know, an older ham or two and keep in touch with them, you know. Set up a sked, make sure that they're okay and things are going well with them. I'm sure they'd very much appreciate it. Another thing I wanted to mention tonight, the ARRL has just released the 2020 edition of the repeater directory. You can get that now from ARRL. We just looked at one of these recently. We looked at the 2019 one, so I'm not going to go into this tonight. It's same great format, but updated for 2020. So get your copy now from the ARRL. Now, Don, I will answer your question. Yes, I'm going to talk about a megger tonight because Amanda, last week during the chat room, she said, George, you need to show us the megger, a demonstration on it. And that came because of a question someone had asked about checking coax. And I kind of brought up, you might want to know about this instrument. Yes, check it with your Simpson or your voltohm meter. Check it with your antenna analyzer. But this other tool might find some stuff that could otherwise be missed. So we're going to look at this. I hope this demonstration is going to work because it's pretty critical as to having the right amount of moisture for me to pull off this little magic trick here. But I'm going to cross my fingers and hope for the best that it still has the right amount because it did right before we started this segment. So a couple of instruments here. First, we've got our trusty old Simpson 260 volt ohm meter here. And I've got a piece of coax. It's just a little short piece here. This is a piece of RG6 that has been contaminated with water. Just at one end of it, I've got alligator clip leads on it. You know, normally when you're going to check something for continuity or to see if it's shorted, you'd put your meter on R times one. You'd connect across it. And if it was a short on it, you know, you'd see that meter go all the way over. And just to prove the meter is on, yes, if I touch the two leads together there, you can see the meter is operational. But, you know, if it was a real high resistance, you might need to go down to another scale. So let's go to R times 100. Still no deflection there. R times 10,000. There's nothing there either. So is there really a problem with this piece of coax? Well, I'm going to take my clip leads and connect them across this old school megger here. This is an old hand crank one, Navy surplus that I talked about a moment last week. It's a megohm meter. Of course, this will read megohms as well, but this one will put 500 volts out there. So we don't want to touch our cables while we're testing this, but let's just spin this crank here and see what happens. You see that meter come up? It didn't come up much, but the fact that it came up at all tells us there is conductivity between the center conductor and the shield here. Let's do that one more time. It's not showing much there, but it is showing a little bit. If I disconnect the lead and crank it, you'll see that, there's nothing there at all. But when we put it on that piece of coax, it's got a little bit of, just a tiny amount of moisture at the end I put on before the show started tonight. You can see there's some resistance there. I wasn't looking at the meter face on. That's probably around, 50 megohms when you put 500 volts on there. So, yeah, that's a dielectric breakdown right there. That might not show up with your antenna analyzer. And as you can see, it didn't show up on that Simpson there on the R times 10,000 scale, but it showed up on the Megger. So that's why, it'd be nice if you had access to one of those. I'm not suggesting that every ham goes out and buys one, but, if you got a buddy with one, he'll probably let you borrow it or check a cable for you, because it's not something you use that often, but it'd be nice to have if you really needed it. I have another nice one here. This one came from a friend, a viewer of the show, and I don't have his name handy here with me right now, or I would tell you. But this is a Greenlee. This is a very sophisticated new one. This one will do up to 1,000 volts down the cable. And in addition to that, it will do time measure tests, so you can set it up to sit there for 10 minutes and do a check on there and see what kind of leakage you got. So Megger's, pretty nice instruments. This one's not cheap. The crank one I just showed you there, I bought that for $50 at a ham fest. But I've been looking for one like that for, at least 15 or 20 years. So I just lucked up and found one at the local ham fest here in February. First one I've seen at a ham fest. There are some models that you can get online, some cheap Chinese ones, less than $100. I don't have any experience with those, but, they may do the job as well. So that's how you might benefit from having access to a Megger. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Bob, because I think I smell some rosin here.
All of you realize that last year was a big year for the building where we did the Pine Board. George was of so much help. And Gene, W4IQM, that did all those great diagrams. Well, it's still alive. I get emails at least a couple a month, but I got one from Bill Steele, and I have to share this with you. George, he knows what a Greenlee punch is.
Okay. And
I'm sure he's got a bender, because he's made his own chassis, and we'll explain some of this as we step through it. So if you see anything you want to comment on it, George, let me know. So, oh, man, this is great stuff from Bill. Bill is W2WJS, and I can tell he's been building for a long, long time. There is his Pine Board, built in a beautiful chassis. You can see all of the neat things where he's got a meter adjustments, and he's got a standby. Also has it so it'll do CW as well as AM, and it's just so well done. Here's how it starts. He has his chassis. Now, I think he might have bought this chassis from Hammond, but I'm not sure, because there are some companies building some chassis, just raw chassis like that. And this is how you start, making all of the right holes and mounting things to see if they're going to fit. And there's the bottom. The bottom will show you all of the things that we built on pine board. However, it's on metal. And there's the choke and all the different things that we did but it's on that metal chassis. I'm really excited about what else he did with all of this. Come on here. One of the things that was really super was he built all of it inside so you can get to it here, but he also has it open on the bottom, as you saw, so you can get to the bottom of it. So it's really a very efficient way of building a transmitter on metal. Here's his station. This is really beautiful. There's the transmitter, the pine board over on the right, and he's got all other kinds of things that he's built. What's on the left of the receiver is a power supply, and you can just tell Bill loves to build. And here's his other part of the station, a couple of amplifiers, and looks like he built his own meters. I mean, I have to get him on here one of these nights, George, and see what he's done. What do you think of that, George? It's pretty super, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We've definitely got to get him on here, Bob. That is some of the nicest-looking homebrew stuff I've ever seen, and the way he had it labeled. I mean, it looked like store-bought stuff. And he can call it a pine board because I did see that little piece of plywood he had in there for a spacer. So that's legit there.
I kind of think we got him on that. I heard Gordo. Gordo, what do you think? We can still qualify it as a pine board, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. I saw that. While it looked like it was several layers, I'm sure one was pine. And George, that was great on the checking a coax through the high voltage source. Wow. Who would have believed that over a Simpson 260?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's, I learned that from a 80-year-old engineer about 30 years ago, a consultant that was hired to come in and fix a directional antenna problem that three other people had thrown their hands up about. And he said, "You got one of those?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't know what you do with it." He showed me. But Bob, that's a super nice looking pine board there. I don't know, man. He gets extra points for that one.
Yeah, very much so. There's several others. Mark down in South Carolina built one. I've talked to him on the air several times with it. And there's been some fascinating things that the fellows have done. And if you haven't sent your pictures in, do that. But more than anything, we want you to send your clubs to us. We want to spotlight your club. We want you to make the club very, very accessible by doing all types of streaming, YouTube, you name it. We can help you do that here. And there's a new address for a me there called hamclubs@twit.tv. And that will get to me. That'll be the best way to send me your information. All you got to do is send me your email, your telephone number, and let's get together and let's start sending some of these clubs and getting them going here on our whole network. And so you just stay in touch with us, okay? Well, let's go see what Amanda's got for all of us. She's probably in the background. There she is in the center. Oh, wow. How are you? Oh, by the way, have you got your Clorox wipes and all that?
Oh, yes. Yes. And hand sanitizer. Been using it quite a bit. I'm into one of those businesses where I cannot work from home. I can't make signs and do copies from my house. So we are open. And this week has been crazy, although we expect it to really go downhill. All of our restaurants have been ordered to be closed, those kinds of things. So we've been doing tons of signs for all of our restaurants saying, takeout orders, call us, blah, blah, blah. So we've been inundated this week, which is really good, but we do expect things to go downhill. But obviously with us being, you know, a travel town. People come through here. We have lots of visitors from out of state, which also brings a lot more COVID-19 along with it, which all of our ski slopes have now closed, things like that. And speaking of that, I just want to reiterate what George said. I think a lot of hams are really proud, and you guys are all of our ham family. So all of you on our local repeaters that we hear every week, we know who you are. And we plan on reaching out to you to make sure everything's good. And it's been really nice to see some of the grocery stores say, we're going to open up to the older age range and let you guys have your own personal time to go in and go shopping. But I'm one of those people where I'd come and collect your checks and go pay your bills for you, take care of your water bill, things like that. So, and I think a lot of us are. So we're all in this together. And we're going to rise above it together. Right, everyone? Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to go over some questions, and George brought up the Meager tonight. And Jim had this question, KI7AY, and I think you answered it perfectly for me. He's been having big difficulties with his 80-meter inverted V, and he wondered if he needed to change the whole underground cable. And a lot of people on chat were giving him some ideas, saying, you know what, it might not be that difficult. It could just be a connector. And as Jeff and I ran into the other weekend, even with vapor wrap on a connector, moisture somehow gets in there. I don't know. It's an act that seems unnatural to me, George, but obviously you nailed it on the head in showing us how to figure that out.
Well, thank you, Amanda. And yeah, I can't zoom in on this end of this cable close enough that you can see it. But if you looked at it, it doesn't feel damp. It doesn't look damp at all. But I know that it was because I put the water on it before the show tonight and then kind of patted it dry. So you don't always physically see with your eye that there's an issue there. You know, it could be it seeped back up in under the jacket somewhere. You just don't know. But I just wanted to show that as another method of testing a piece of cable. It's a lot of work to go dig up a lot of line and replace it. So if you can find someone who's got one of those, maybe borrow it and check things out. And I'll give you a hint. You might check with electricians because they use these a lot for checking out house wiring and stuff to make sure there's no issues in there. So you might have an electrician buddy who's got one.
Okay. And Bob, you have never ran into the problem of having moisture in your coax, right?
You know what? I never have. I really haven't. Honestly, we had over 500 foot when I was in the Ozarks for those 8 years that I had that all going. The antenna system was 500 feet from the shack, all underground, but it was cable that was capable of doing that. It was Times line. It wasn't some just ordinary coax. It was 213, RG213, but it was the Times line T number. And I mean, they guarantee this stuff can be used underground. And in all those years, I never had a problem. And I dug some of it up. A lot of it I just cut off and left. That was a sad moment to take my big shears and cut off 15 pieces of coax coming out of the house. But every once in a while, as it would come out of the ground, I would check it, and it was dry. So, and I know because the system worked great. So it is something to be aware of. If you're going to do things underground, there are coaxes to do that. Make sure that's what they sell you and what you purchase.
Absolutely. And DX Engineering. And Gordo, what about you? You run into that problem ever?
I once watched a commercial Megger checking out about 400 feet of coax that was underground, and they actually determined through the Megger, through the TDR, time domain reflectometer, exactly where the water had come in. And what they discovered was someone had punched in some sprinkler heads and punched a little tiny hole in the jacket, and the water creeped in. But through the maker with an additional TDR from the commercial $1,000 an hour folks, they were able to actually spot where the short was happening. Well, not quite as short, where the leakage was happening. Good point, George, as well.
Wow. Now, George, do you have any super secret ways of waterproofing your connectors?
Yes. Use everything you've got once and then do another layer of everything you've got on top of that. You know,
right.
I don't know that there are any foolproof methods, but, you know, just wrapping it with electric tape, you probably don't need the Megger because you can just count on that's not going to last.
Right.
What I like to, well, what I use most, now coaxial is good, and they use something similar for that on the commercial, you know, high power, what we call heliax, hams call it hardline, but, you know, like 3.5 or 4 inch round heliax. They've got something there. Trying to think of what the tower guy calls that. I want to say fusion wrap. It's like coaxial though. It's sort of a putty material that's black and is extremely sticky, and that's what they'll usually use, but. For most of my personal stuff, I have used that. It's kind of messy if you're ever planning on going back in there again. What I normally use is some stuff called, well, I use the 3M brand because I found some of the other brands you'll find at the Ham Fest may not be as good, but it's rubber splicing tape. It looks like black tape. Except it's rubber, and you know it'll stretch way out. I take it and you know wrap it real good around my connections, way back from the connector. You know, don't just do it right there at the end. Come on back down the coax a little bit. Wrap it around good. Do at least 2 or 3 layers overlapping every one, and then I come over the top of that with Scotch 88 electric tape. Because the rubber splicing tape's not really made to be put out in ultraviolet, at least where I've seen it in ultraviolet light or in the sunlight, it has kind of deteriorated over the years. But if you wrap it good with Scotch 88 electrical tape, that has worked pretty good for me.
Also,
don't forget that. Just because you've got it sealed up where that connector goes into the antenna doesn't mean that there isn't somewhere on the antenna that water can seep back down in there. So you got to check it all out.
The coaxial, it comes from Universal Electronics in Columbus, Ohio. They really have the seal on that, I should say. They invented it some years ago. Tom that owned the place years ago, he kind of invented that. And you can buy that from Universal Electronics, as well as a lot of other things. It's a good company. And you kind of slid by it, but you need to make a billboard out of this. The tape, George, it's Scotch 88, right?
Scotch 88, yes. 33 is the thin stuff, and that's kind of flexible, and maybe it's good for indoor use, but outdoors, you want to go with Scotch 88. I mean, it's the thicker, heavy-duty stuff, isn't it, Gordo?
Yep. Scotch 88. And then I even do some marine self-vulcanizing tape that they use on stainless steel, and it catches it all. But I think Scotch 88, the best.
Yeah.
And so, I'm back. So
you're back.
I can talk about the nets. And Delta says, hi, everybody. Hi, Delta. All right. You went in the fur baby. Not the big ears one.
Parabolic reflectors.
All right. I know this has been a great show, and I know Bob's going to wrap it up here for us. But I just wanted to go over the Nets quickly. We've got D-Star running right now on 14, Charlie. We have DMR on 31-0, 12. 40 meters was, it's dismal this time of night right now. So try to see if Kevin's on 71-92. And I think Steve W7UDI was going to be on around 39-08. Other than that, everyone, wash your dang hands, use your sanitizer, don't go out more than you need to. And the other thing I would say is put your nets on our Facebook page. There might be some of us that just don't have anything to do. List those nets and you might get some more visitors. So with that, I'll send it back to you, Bob.
Okay, well, it's been wonderful. There's a lot of information here tonight. That's what Ham Nation's all about. We want you to bring things to us that we can talk about and share with all amateur operators. And I do want you to send me hamclubs@twit.tv email. hamclubs@twit.tv. Let's set up a time. All you have to do is have Skype, a microphone and a screen. A laptop works well. So let's do that. We need to get more of your ideas, and we want to share ideas, get these clubs out there live streaming and doing some fun things. That's what it's all about. So please stay in touch and be safe. We'll catch you on the air, because that's where we're all going to be for at least a couple of months. What do you think? 7-3, everybody. Bye-bye for now. We'll see you around the corner.